You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
George Galloway is a traveler. There are those who don't like the countries he chooses to visit. There are those who don't like the people he meets on his visits. And there are those who don't like the items he brings on his visits. And the Canadian government minister, Jason Kenney, is one of those in the don't like category. He particularly doesn't like George Galloway visiting Canada, meeting with people who oppose this government's military intervention in Afghanistan and its total and unquestioning support for the actions of the State of Israel. Simply put, Mr. Kenney doesn't like George Galloway bringing and sharing his ideas with people in Canada. But a Canadian judge determined that Mr. Kenney's efforts to ban George Galloway was a stretch too far and sharply rapped his knuckles. George Galloway now is in Toronto and in the midst of a very successful cross-Canada speaking tour organized by peace and anti-war coalitions in this country. And we've reached him in Toronto. Greetings, George Galloway, and congratulations on winning a battle that affirms an important democratic right for you to come here and for us to hear you.
Yes, well, the issue is not that people need to agree with my ideas, but they need to know that these ideas exist in the world, that they're widely shared in the world, and that the Canadian people need to hear them and weigh them in the balance with Mr. Kenney and Mr. Harper's ideas, so that they can make a better informed decision on whether or not Canada's in the right place in international relations today. It goes without saying, I think, that I feel that Canada has become dangerously isolated in its association with extremist Israeli politics and its gung-ho attitude to the war in Afghanistan and its increasingly draconian attitude to different points of view. It's becoming the country most associated with the word banned in the world. All sorts of people are now being banned from Canada, or that it's being made very difficult indeed for them to come to Canada to express themselves. And that's just such a change in Canada's image in the world that I just wonder how it all happened.
You're speaking on the Cross Canada tour under the items freedom for Afghanistan, freedom for Palestine, and freedom to speak. I'm wondering if you could just again give us a bit of a sense. What does it mean to pursue freedom for Afghanistan? What do you advocate?
Well, implicit in your question is the correct assumption that I'm not saying that merely withdrawing foreign occupation forces will lead to freedom in Afghanistan. But what I am saying is that unless we do withdraw the foreign forces, there will never be freedom in Afghanistan. In other words, foreign forces withdrawal is a necessary, though not sufficient, condition to bring about stability in Afghanistan, which is, of course, a human necessity for the Afghans, but also bring about a position where we and the rest of the world are not threatened from Afghanistan. And we need to negotiate a package which involves our withdrawal, which involves the creation of a genuine national unity government in Afghanistan, and guarantees that Al-Qaeda and the bin Laden madness does not return to Afghanistan. Not only do I think that such an agreement can be reached today, I believe that it could have been reached at any time in the last decade. And moreover, it will be reached, and we will withdraw from Afghanistan, so better now rather than later.
If the condition, necessary condition is withdrawal, foreign forces in terms of freedom for Palestine, what's the necessary condition?
Well, justice is the necessary condition, that no justice, no peace. It's really not rocket science. You don't need to be Einstein to work it out. If there's no justice for the Palestinians, there'll be no peace there. And if there's no peace there, there'll be no peace in the Muslim world. And there'll be no peace between the Muslim world and the Western world, which pays for armors and diplomatically and politically buttresses every aspect of the Israeli occupation of Palestinian land and the continued exile and dispossession of millions of Palestinians scattered around the world. Now, what would justice look like? Well, let me tell you what I used to think it could look like. I supported the Oslo Agreement because I was all my life and until his death, comrade of Yasser Arafat. I supported the Oslo Agreement. I believed him when he told me that this was the best deal that the Palestinians could get, given the configuration of force and power in the world in the early 1990s. But 16 years later, when not only has not an inch of Palestine been liberated, but that gigantic apartheid walls and whole cities that they call settlements have been constructed on the tiny piece of Palestine that was going to be given to the Palestinians by Oslo, I no longer think that that's viable. So I'm campaigning for a binational state called Israel-Palestine or Palestine-Israel from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, in which everyone, Jew, Christian, Muslim, would live as equal citizens under the law.
Now, free speech, you began by saying what your trip here is about is that let Kenny, let Harper have their views and you have yours, and let Canadians here decide and reflect upon what makes most sense. Are you in favor of free speech on all comments, or do you feel there's some lines that can't be crossed in terms of free expression?
Well, again, that's a very smart question. I'm not, in fact, in favor of unlimited free speech, and indeed, no country in the world has unlimited free speech. The laws of libel and defamation, for example, preclude me telling lies about people on your radio show. And libel and defamation, it can be an expensive business, as Jason Kenney and his entourage are about to find out in relation to me. There are also limits on free speech against those who seek to stir up racial and religious hatred. Hatred against people, not for anything that they have done, but for who or what they are. These are necessary limitations on free speech. But neither of them applies to me. I'm not defaming or libeling anybody. Neither am I or have I ever in my entire life sought to incite religious or racial hatred. On the contrary, I'm a man of the left. I have spent my entire life fighting racism. Anti-Semitism is merely another, though particularly virulent, strain of racism. And no one can point to a single thing I have ever done or said or written which qualifies as hate speech of any kind. And it's that which is the unkindest cut of all for me, that I, as a man of the left, could conceivably be regarded and certainly be described as someone engaging in the incitement of racial or religious hatred. Nothing, literally nothing, could be further from the truth.
Any activist worth her salt has critics, and as you travel in Canada, the loyalists for Israel try to undercut your events, and they try to wreck organizations that are arranging platforms on which you speak. What is your response to their opposition to your speaking?
Well, actually, it's been a spectacular failure. The only place where there was any kind of protest was at York University, just outside Toronto, and there were fewer than 100 protesters. The great majority of them were not from York University. Most of them were rather hairy-faced, older men who were very unlikely even to be students, never mind students at York University. And they were organized as the Haaretz Daily, the Israeli daily newspaper, was the only Canadian, only newspaper I've seen since I got into Canada, who properly identified that these protests were being organized by the right-wing Jewish Defense League, so-called, which is so extreme that it's banned even in Israel. And Haaretz was the only paper, actually, since I got to Canada, that actually pointed that out. So all the other meetings went entirely without incident. There was no protest of any kind at them. And the audiences have been, well, staggering. And for this, I suppose, we must thank Jason Kenney, because audiences that might have been in the small number of hundreds are now in the very high hundreds, and I'm hoping that in Vancouver early next week that I'm going to have my very first four-figure audience. More than 1,000 people, I hope, will come out to hear the meeting in Vancouver. So it's not working. That's the good news.
Another criticism. In this country and internationally, there are victims of the Iranian theocracy that have sought refuge from persecution, and some among them here in the city of Vancouver have raised the criticism of you and of organizers of your visit here. And here's their argument, that you regularly speak on Iranian TV without making criticisms of the regime, broadcasting in English to people internationally. And in doing so, they charge that you're complicit in the Iranian government's repression of Iranians who oppose the government's policies. What's your response to that criticism?
Well, it's untrue. Not only do I regularly criticize aspects of Iranian regime policy, I do so live on Iranian television. As anyone who watches my two weekly shows on Press TV, which is the English language station to which you refer, can testify to that. Not only that, I interviewed Ahmadinejad himself just a few weeks ago. It's available on YouTube. I pressed him on several of the aspects to which you allude. So it isn't even true. But if you're saying to me that I should line up with those like Israel, like the United States, like Britain, like Canada, who wish to isolate and demonize the Iranian regime in the way that they did the Iraqi regime as a precursor to ever-increasing sanctions and potentially war against Iran, I will not do so. I don't want to have a war with Iran. I think it would be an absolute catastrophe if we were to invade Iran in the way that we invaded Iraq. And there are people at work who want to bring that about, and they're seeking to march the rest of us down the road, incrementally, today by aspects of women's rights, tomorrow by aspects of gay rights, the day after by failures of the Iranian election system, and so on. They're talking us, they hope to sleepwalk us, into another war. And I will not myself agree with that. Let's take the last point first. On elections, I have no doubt that the Iranian election system, the democratic system in Iran, is filled with imperfections and flaws, but at least there is an election process in Iran. In our best friends in the Arab countries in the Gulf, to whom we sell unlimited amounts of weapons, with whom we have the closest possible friendships, there are no elections of any kind, perfect or imperfect, with limited lists of candidates for the presidency or not. Nobody elected the king of here or there in the Arabian Gulf, and nobody ever will until those political systems are changed. I am responsible for my own views on gay rights, on women's rights. And believe me, I proselytize for them, including on Iranian television.
Now, earlier this morning, I spoke with a student in Manchester about the student revolt in the UK. So my concluding question really concerns your home base in Britain. Had you been successful in the last election, and were you still now a member of parliament in Westminster, what would you be saying about the present circumstances in the UK?
Well, I think that the Conservative and Liberal Democrat coalition is now on a slippery slope that will lead to their premature unhorsing. The provocation of vast cuts in public services, all in the name of deficit reduction, when in fact our deficit is no greater than any of the comparable countries with whom we usually compare ourselves, and in fact is less severe than most of them, is going to worsen the conditions of life for tens of millions of people in my country. And the student revolt is just the first shot in what's going to be, I think, a long, hot winter, of discontent, as people realize the scale, the savagery of the cuts that they're going to face. They'll stand up and fight them, and they'll always be able to count me as a friend in that fight.
Well, thank you very much, George Galloway, for speaking with us today, and we wish you the best in your upcoming meetings, and I'll certainly give people information about the details of the Vancouver meeting on Monday, when you'll be here. Thank you.
Thank you, my friend.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. Bye now.
Bye. You've been listening to George Galloway, longtime member of Parliament in Britain, who currently is on a Cross Canada speaking tour. He's going to be speaking in Vancouver this Monday at 7:30 p.m. The doors open at 6:30 p.m. There are some tickets still available. They're available at the door, but we suggest that you arrive early to get them if you want to be sure of having a seat. And where was that meeting? It's at St. Andrew's Wesley United Church. And that church is at the corner of Burrard and Nelson Streets in downtown Vancouver.